You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Homicides are up across large cities across the nation, but Milwaukee is experiencing unprecedented numbers of violent crimes. Police there say the crimes are being committed by younger people, and homicides are likely connected to the city's car thefts and reckless driving increases. Corrine Hess has more.
Last month, a 47-year-old Oshkosh woman tried to stop four teenagers from stealing a car at a Holiday Inn Express just outside Milwaukee and Wauwatosa. The woman was killed when one of the boys got into her car, pushed her out, and ran over her several times. The criminal complaint contained horrific details that led to a 13-year-old boy being charged as an adult. He faces six felony charges and up to 115 years in prison if convicted. The case is extreme, but it's one of the many violent crimes in Milwaukee County where young people are involved. Nick Desiato is the chief of staff at the Milwaukee Police Department. He says teens have easy access to guns, and younger people are stealing cars and driving recklessly, which is all connected.
And while those may seem like a very distinct category, a reckless driver who drives another vehicle and kills somebody is still a form of a homicide or the contributing factor for somebody else's death.
At a small business hub in Milwaukee's Sherman Park community, activist Vaughn Mays says when he was a kid, he was committing crimes too, but now the stakes are much higher. At 15, he was doing what he called block banging. Now 34, he says it's still happening, but today kids as young as 12 are using guns instead of fists and posting the violence on social media to gain notoriety.
It's like reality TV on steroids.
One video posted on Facebook Live and obtained by WPR depicts three young women dancing and laughing while pointing a semi-automatic weapon at the screen. Sometimes the videos show teens or young people in stolen vehicles driving recklessly through crowded city streets. Mays believes young people have a live fast, die young attitude, which has made everything more dangerous in the city. But that doesn't mean they aren't still kids, many without much family support.
A lot of these kids, when you talk to them, like when they in these cars and they got these guns, they like the most tough person ever. But if you catch them outside of that, they not like that at all. They very scared, frail, fragile, sensitive.
Milwaukee police officials don't dispute Mays's claims. Homicides are up about 32% in large cities across the nation, but Desiato says no city has been hit harder than Milwaukee, which has seen an increase three times the national average. There were 190 homicides in Milwaukee last year, the most on record. Through last week, the city was on pace to pass that number. Today's version of block banging can't be blamed entirely for that increase. Domestic violence homicides are up, and Desiato says many shootings are retaliation for previous crimes.
Is this an ongoing thread? Is this something that we can somehow get ahead of and be proactive, whether through the means of law enforcement or through some of our partners?
Some residents and communities, like Sherman Park, are skeptical law enforcement can stem the violence. When about a dozen gunshots rang out one October afternoon, Patricia Norman and her daughter barely flinched, even though the shots sounded close to their quiet, tree-lined street, and they were on their porch.
To me, I don't get scared. I mean, if I feel like it's real close, I know what to, if I'm sitting out here, I know what to run my butt in the house.
Norman moved back to Milwaukee about 2 years ago and loves the city, but sometimes she feels hopeless.
Because if they can't get the guns out these kids' hands, then ain't nothing they can do. Because it's not going to stop. I don't see where it's going to stop. And I don't see what nobody can do about it.
A few days after the Oshkosh woman was murdered, a Milwaukee County judge told the 13-year-old the nature of his charges, including first-degree reckless homicide, could not be more serious. The boy told the court he understood, and he wanted to call his mom. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, you have a line to Attorney General Josh Call. A bit of a roadmap here for our conversation. We'll get reaction to the GOP election probes. We'll check in on the clergy and faith leader abuse initiative next steps. We start, though, with the package of proposals unveiled this week focused on community-based crime prevention and mental health. How do you think lawmakers should respond to this sharp increase in violent crime? What can be done to make communities safer? 800-642-1234. Attorney General Josh Call, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
This spike in homicides is hitting so many communities so hard, Milwaukee, of course, and beyond. What does your new package do to temper this rash of violent crime?
Yeah, I'm calling for a swift action from the legislature and concrete action to reduce crime and to strengthen communities. And I think first it's important to look at where we are. There are a number of communities, and Milwaukee is certainly a good example of this, that have faced significant underinvestment in vital services, and that's been particularly true from our state legislature. And the pandemic has led to increased isolation and the interruption of services that were otherwise available. And amid that, we have seen some very serious consequences in terms of shootings and opioid overdose deaths. And I'm calling for the legislature to reinvest in our communities with a $115 million investment. And we've laid out a series of proposals for a comprehensive approach. But there are four basic goals. One is to strengthen community trust and prevent crime. A second is to keep guns out of the hands of people who have been shown to be dangerous. This is being driven, this homicide spike, by gun violence. Third, addressing substance use disorder and mental health crises more effectively. And then fourth, making sure that we have policies in place that will hold the offenders accountable.
Looking at the situation with guns, the FBI is tracking record sales of firearms, huge jump in federal background checks, a shortage of ammunition in Wisconsin. When you look at those numbers, what then in your package will help address this deluge of guns flowing into communities?
Yeah, our office conducts many of the background checks that take place in Wisconsin, and we've seen a significant spike in the number of background checks that are being requested. What I think we need to do is, like I said, take steps to keep firearms out of the hands of people who've been shown to be dangerous. Right now, we don't have universal background checks in Wisconsin. And one of the things that we've proposed here, which we've proposed before, but we're going to keep advocating for until the legislature takes action, is to expand background checks so that there's a background check conducted for every firearm purchase in Wisconsin. We've also included a proposed prohibition on ghost guns, so that people can't evade background checks that way. And I think when there are repeat offenses of felon in possession or straw purchasing offenses, we need to increase the felony classification for those offenses. And then last, we've proposed a red flag law, which would allow a judge to make a determination if there's somebody who's a danger to themselves or others, and if so, to temporarily remove firearms from that person.
As you mentioned, this package does contain universal background checks and a red flag law. These haven't gained traction in the past with Republican lawmakers. Is there a different strategy here, or what has changed?
Well, I'm hoping that Republican lawmakers in the legislature will look at what's happening in cities across the country and see the impact that gun violence is having on driving this spike in homicides and take action. Now, you know, I recognize that the Republican members of the legislature are unlikely to take this up wholesale, but this is a comprehensive proposal. There are a number of different ideas here for preventing crime and for making sure that offenders are held accountable. And I'm hopeful that we will see members of the legislature engage with these ideas and take some action. You know, one of the other things we talk about is investing in community policing and prosecution. Violence prevention programs and reentry programs that can reduce recidivism. So there are some significant funding investments that will also help reduce crime and reduce shootings.
The package creates funding for at least six jobs in DOJ focused on violent crime or officer training, more funding for toxicology positions at the state crime lab. Why not add prosecutors? Why not add criminal investigators to crack down on the violent crime caseload and go after perpetrators?
Well, some of the positions we've suggested for DOJ would be prosecutors who are prosecuting violent crimes. The other thing is we've made real progress in the last two state budgets in adding prosecutors around the state. There have been about 70 additional prosecutor positions created in the last two state budgets. And, I certainly think we would benefit from more prosecutors, but we've made significant progress there. But what we are proposing, in addition to those resources at DOJ, is $20 million for community policing and prosecutors so that communities across the state can have prosecutors or police officers in their communities who are working on building strong relationships and holding people accountable. And we've also proposed $10 million for officer recruitment and retention and wellness programs. Officer retention and recruitment are big issues right now, and having creative grant programs in communities across the state is critical. The other thing I would note is this proposal is about empowering communities throughout the state. You know, what works in one city may be different from what works in another city. So we're suggesting grant programs that allow cities to tailor solutions to the specific challenges that they're facing.
You've made strides in recent years to clear the sexual assault kit backlog. Is the state crime lab, as you look at adding positions there, adding funding, is the state crime lab facing any backlogs at this stage of the pandemic?
The pandemic certainly impacted the way that the crime labs are able to do their work. They had to entirely rework their workflow to make sure that people were safe and safely distanced from each other. Fortunately, you know, we've continued to work to make sure that evidence is being tested efficiently. But having more resources will help us turn those tests around faster and get evidence to prosecutors and everybody else involved in the criminal justice system faster. One of the things we're calling for in this package is some other legislation that has made some progress in the legislature. It's passed the Senate twice, but so far has not gotten through the Assembly, and that's reform to our sexual assault kit laws. We're including proposals that would require every sexual assault kit in the state to be submitted to the state crime labs pretty quickly. That's going to help us hold offenders accountable, because when that evidence is tested, the DNA testing can lead to the identification of offenders. So it's critical that those kits are submitted and that where there is evidence, it's followed up on promptly.
Let's bring on a caller now, Andrew in Douseman. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how's everybody doing today?
Doing well. What is your question for the Attorney General?
So given that the rise in violent crime, in particular related to firearms, is primarily in urban areas, how do you justify having a red flag gun law in place to take mostly law-abiding firearms from law-abiding citizens? How do you justify that, given that's not generally where the violent crime is coming from?
Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Andrew. So first, I think it's important to note that we are proposing a comprehensive package here that includes a number of proposed changes. Red flag laws in states where they've been adopted have been shown to have positive impacts on safety, and where they actually seem to have the biggest impact is on preventing suicides. There are careful due process protections in place with these laws, and they've been adopted in a number of states now. And they require somebody to go to a judge to prove that somebody is a danger to themselves or others. We have a similar process in the state for mental health emergency detentions. But this is asking for something much more limited than a mental health emergency detention where somebody's actually taken into custody. This is just asking to have somebody's firearms temporarily removed. And I believe, and the evidence shows, that this kind of change can help save lives in Wisconsin.
We have Attorney General Josh Call on the line as we look at the pressing issues facing the State Justice Department. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Attorney General Josh Call on the pressing issues before DOJ and Attorney General Call will be with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's look at the clergy abuse inquiry. You reported DOJ has received nearly 180 reports of abuse by clergy and faith leaders. What have you learned so far in the investigation?
Well, we're not going to go into detail yet about specific allegations, but we have received information from across the state. One of our goals was to create a safe and trusted place for survivors to report. And given the number of reports that we've received, I think we've succeeded in that. And I've been really encouraged by how many people have reached out. One of the goals is to connect those folks who reach out either to victim services if they would like, or to just give them a place to share their experiences. Now, we also are working to follow up on every report that's made. We have a multidisciplinary team that is in the process of doing that. And we've received reports, like I said, not only from across the state, but some involving different religious organizations and some involving no religious organizations as well. And we want to continue encouraging people who have information or who were survivors of any institutional abuse to contact our office so that we can take their report.
In recent days, Native survivors of clergy abuse and members of the Menominee tribe have requested that you broaden the scope of your clergy investigation and include sexual abuse at Catholic-run Indian residential schools and parishes. Will you do that?
Well, first, let me say that what's happened at boarding schools is disgraceful, and it's disturbing, and my heart goes out to everybody who's been impacted by that. Our review is incorporating all kinds of institutionalized abuse. So anybody who has information about abuse at boarding schools or in any other institutionalized context, we want to encourage them to report to us so that we can follow up. I've had the opportunity to speak about our clergy and faith leader abuse initiative to members of the Great Lakes Intertribal Council, as well as the co-chairs of our Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force. And if people have information, we strongly encourage them to report to us.
Let's move on to election probes. Former State Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman leading one of the 2020 presidential election investigations. Last month, you filed a suit on behalf of the Wisconsin Elections Commission to block some of Gableman's subpoenas. He's cut down the scope of information requests to election clerks and the related documents. How much are your concerns resolved?
Well, so far he cut them down with the clerks, but not with the election commission who we're representing in this. But one of our biggest concerns is that he has been seeking to conduct these interviews in private. And the law is clear that this is supposed to take place in front of the committee. So my hope is that if there are interviews that take place, they'll take place in public, so that the public can hear directly from our election officials and so that legislators can be present for those interviews. Now, we raise other issues in our challenge as well, and if there isn't a change in what's being requested, there will be court proceedings on this. So we'll wait to see what the next step is from Justice Gableman.
If you're just joining us, talking with Josh Call, oversees the State Department of Justice, Attorney General of Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Racine County Sheriff Chris Schmeling said he believed election laws were violated in the Mount Pleasant nursing home, but you are not launching a statewide investigation. Why is that?
Well, first, I think it's important to bear in mind the context that we're in here. You know, he proposed charging 5 of the 6 members of the State Election Commission with crimes. And, you know, Dean Knutson, who's one of the members of that commission and is a former Republican state legislator and was appointed to that position by Speaker Robin Voss, you know, made the point that certain public figures in Wisconsin, as he said, are under intense pressure to find someone to be the fall guy for Trump's loss in 2020 in Wisconsin. And, you know, we have seen effort after effort to promote the big lie and to try to keep this conspiracy theory going. We don't launch investigations at the Department of Justice based on politics or based on conspiracy theories. We do it based on facts and the law. And the facts here are that there was a very lengthy investigation conducted by the Racine County Sheriff's Office that so far has not resulted in any charges against anybody in Racine County. And there is no evidence that's been presented to us of similar allegations anywhere else, either in Racine County or around the state. So there's not a basis right now for any kind of statewide investigation, and it's frankly not even close. Our investigators investigate some of the most serious offenses around the state, from homicides to arsons to sexual assaults. And if there is a reason to think that there is significant election fraud, you know, we would be happy to work with DA's offices or local law enforcement to follow up on that. But so far, we haven't received anything like that.
Before we have to let you go, PFAS, dozens of PFAS contamination sites hitting communities, unsafe drinking water. I believe in August you hired an outside law firm to assist in litigating potential claims. Where are you at with holding polluters accountable and going after these environmental cases?
We're doing several different things to combat PFAS. It's critical that everybody in Wisconsin feels safe and is safe drinking the water that's coming out of their tap. We need to protect our natural resources. One thing we are doing is when environmental violation referrals come to us, we've strengthened our enforcement of environmental laws. But we brought in an outside firm to help consider whether there are claims that potentially can be brought relating to PFAS contamination. So we are working with that firm to assess what our next step should be. We're also advocating for policy changes that will help prevent future PFAS contamination. The federal government, for example, is considering strengthening its protections against PFAS, and we've been leading national groups of AGs in advocating for those stronger protections. So the efforts to bring potential enforcement actions are continuing, and our efforts to strengthen protections for people across the country and in Wisconsin are continuing as well.
Attorney General, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Josh Call is the Attorney General of Wisconsin. Just ahead, Netflix has a new limited series out on Milwaukee-born athlete Colin Kaepernick. We talk about his activism with Dave Zirin, the sports editor for The Nation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.